Hello, and welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. Today's topic, sibling relationships and rivalries. What can parents do?
Well, one thing that we can do right now is to thank the Engelhard Foundation and NPEN.org for sponsoring our podcast. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. So, John, I'm excited about this.
Are you?
Yeah. I have two boys.
Yeah, I know.
And sometimes I think they might be rivals.
And what gives you that impression?
Well, one of them's leaving for a month and the other one can't stop talking about how excited he is. There's one.
That's one observation.
Yeah, I could go on and on.
Give me one more.
One more?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'm overwhelmed with thoughts about all the examples that I can have. Do I have to go if he's going? If he's going, I don't want to go. Mm. Do I have to sit here? He's sitting here. I don't want to sit this close.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to have him in my car. He's too distracting. It's not safe for me. Really, that's just an excuse.
Yeah. Okay. So you have made
these. Go on?
No, you can stop now.
Okay.
So you've made these observations, and I'm thinking you might be right, that there might be some sibling rivalry going on. Mm-hmm. But let's start with a definition. So here's the definition. Sibling rivalry involves jealousy and competition between siblings. Mm-hmm. There can be open verbal or physical fighting or more indirect conflict. Sounds like yours is pretty verbal, pretty direct.
Mm-hmm.
They're complaining about each other.
Yep.
Or one is complaining about the other one a lot.
It's mutual.
It's mutual.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times it will feel with sibling rivalry like kids are vying for something, competing for something, but the concrete item might be irrelevant, okay? So the concrete item might not even be important, but it's like that competition is what seems to sustain them.
Mm-hmm.
They can be jealous about anything. So one thing that I found, which is really interesting, is that sibling rivalry is really pretty darn universal, and it can be so problematic. I remember over time having many parents bring their kids in, and sibling rivalry and the fighting and the nastiness between the kids was oftentimes a primary concern for them bringing their child for counseling.
Well, forgive me, but that makes me feel better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes the problems can start right away. I remember. Well, I don't remember because it's just a story. But when I was first born, my mother was holding me, and my sister, who was older, bit my toe.
Oh.
She was jealous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
It can start right away, and it can continue into adulthood, sibling tensions and conflict and rivalries.
Yeah. I mean, so I think we're talking a little bit about a distinction between rivalry and a sibling relationship. I mean,
right.
And I would say with my kids, gosh, sometimes I see that there's a relationship there, but I would say it's mostly rivalry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's some little relational things. Maybe you want to try to grow those, and maybe they'll get easier over time, maybe when the boys are adults.
It's my goal. That is my goal.
Yeah.
It's a huge goal that
you'd like them to have a relationship that has some positivity when they are older.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. You probably know that old sibling rivalry story that is in the book Siblings Without Rivalry by Faber and Maslich.
Mm-hmm. I've read it 3,500 times.
Okay. Well, the story goes something like this.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, I think it's the husband who comes home to the wife and says, oh, honey, I love you so much. I love you so, so very much. You know, do you know how much I love you?
Mm-hmm.
You are so special to me. In fact, you are so special to me. I am going to have another wife.
I get it.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what my oldest might have felt when we had a second child, right? You're so amazing that I'm just going to have another one.
It is not an automatically pleasing event to have another one on the scene.
It's not. It's really hard.
Right.
And I'm going to say, I did a lot of the prepping things when I was pregnant with my second one. So, you know, we just talked a lot about how special his role was going to be, to be the older brother and all those things. And it was great for a while. Another thing I can remember is that this sounds silly now, but at the time I took it very seriously, that when I was holding the baby and the older one wanted something, I wouldn't say, oh, I can't help you, I'm holding the baby. I would say, oh, my hands are busy. You know, I thought it was just this clever way of letting him know that it's not about the baby. that I can't hold you. It's just that my hands are busy.
You thought maybe he wouldn't pick up on the fact that your hands were busy holding the baby?
At the time, I thought it was this genius restating of something.
Right. It does sound pretty darn ingenious. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that he made the observation that, in fact, the reason your hands were busy was because you were holding that dreadful other entity that you had brought into the world.
You know, the other thing that I do is I usually don't give, you know, everyone likes to give baby gifts. And of course, mm-hmm. you might give a baby gift to the first child. Mm-hmm. But I give sibling gifts.
Nice.
You know, because I just think they're the ones that need it. The baby doesn't know the difference.
Oh, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. the siblings are the ones that are suffering.
Mm-hmm. They're suffering.
They need a gift.
Yeah.
All right. So, hey, tell me what you think are the main sources of conflict between siblings. You know, what are the things that really increase the conflict?
Oh, gosh. I think there's so many. One that comes to mind is sharing, and mm-hmm. I have this hilarious story. I don't know. Okay, so picture this. There's two boys, and they're fighting over an imaginary cookie.
Okay, now help me picture it. How old are they?
Oh, like 4 and 7.
Okay.
Let me just stress this. The cookie doesn't exist.
How did the imaginary cookie get created?
I don't know.
They're pretending that there's a cookie.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So they're fighting over who gets the imaginary cookie. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. They're chasing each other around the house, yelling, he has the imaginary cookie. I want the imaginary cookie. You know, they're not, oh my gosh. Okay. So the one brother.
Yeah. So they didn't realize they could create a second imaginary cookie and maybe a bigger one.
Okay.
You're right.
So the kid with the imaginary cookie takes an imaginary bite of the imaginary cookie, mm-hmm. and the other kid loses it, like falls to the ground, kicking, screaming, loses their mind. You know?
And it wasn't just play. It was really losing it.
Tears, screaming.
Mm-hmm. He bit the cookie.
The whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that is a fabulous story.
So sharing, I think, is a big thing.
Yes, yes. Okay, so in addition to imaginary cookies, mm-hmm. sharing also probably includes parental attention.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And money, because there's only so much money to go around the house, and somebody might be jealous of the other one getting some money.
Mm-hmm.
Real food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Not imaginary food.
Right.
Who gets the biggest piece of cake.
Right.
I've seen that be a problem.
Yeah.
Toys, hard to share. Rooms, cars. Can you think of other things that are challenges that create conflict between siblings?
Yeah, well, and I can think of other things. And then just another point about all of this stuff and mm-hmm. sharing is that I think sometimes it really is about the thing,
right.
You know? And I think sometimes it's not. I think sometimes it represents like, oh, if that kid has 3 pairs of shoes and I only have 1 new pair of shoes, then that means that kid's loved more than I am,
mm-hmm.
you know? So mm-hmm. it's just represents something for the kid.
Yeah. Who goes first?
Yeah.
Man, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Who gets to go first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the other thing, and this is the case with my kids, is that they are so different, just really different styles mm-hmm. and personalities and just ways of being. I have one very introverted kid,
okay.
and I have one very extroverted kid. I have one, the introvert, really likes his own space, his mm-hmm. own stuff. He has a big personal bubble, as we say. The other one has no concept of what personal space might be. None whatsoever.
And he's, okay. He's the hugger.
Yeah. So what we say is we've got a cat, you know, who's mm-hmm. on his own terms, and then we've got a big Labrador puppy mm-hmm. who's just climbs in your space and gets all over you and is loud and messy. Yep. And it's just really who they both are.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
Right. So they may be just different in terms of their personality or their temperament.
Mm-hmm.
And those differences, they're an odd couple, right? They're just like the odd couple.
They are. That's a good way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so it's a challenge for them to live in the same space.
And it's a challenge for us to live in the same space with them.
Yes. Well, another issue is age or birth order. And the dynamic for that is that oftentimes the way that the psychological theorists have talked about it is that when the second child is born, the first child is dethroned.
Mm-hmm.
And so then because of being dethroned, that first child will always be resentful.
Mm.
I mean, there are biblical stories mm-hmm. about this, right?
Yep.
This is something that's been going on for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
We will likely not solve it.
Yeah.
There's that dethroning and there will be some resentment.
Yeah.
I remember my oldest sister just, you know, calling us names, just devaluing us as people. She's great now.
Good. Oh, yeah. I'm so glad.
She's great now.
Thank you.
We all get along quite well. So the dethroning is inevitable and mostly unpleasant, and sometimes kids are better or worse at adjusting to it.
Yeah. Another thing I've read is that same gender siblings have a harder time getting along.
Yeah. I think that could be true. I'm aware of opposite sex siblings who are really dynamically reactive to one another in terms of sibling rivalry. But I think it might be true. I suppose the similarity or the sameness of gender and sex might make them more immediate rivals.
More competitive, I
think. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. I remember in high school, I had a friend who, he had three brothers, and so there were four boys. And their level of sibling rivalry was so physical and so frightening. I mean, they would just body slam each other, and they would hurt each other. And I remember their parents just kind of watching them.
It can escalate so fast.
It was really fast. I remember just being shocked because it was not the way we lived in our home.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that parents should ignore that kind of thing, because I think if there is danger to your kids' health and safety, you should intervene. On the other hand, I think sometimes letting kids have conflict is not the worst thing in the world. We should teach them some skills for dealing with the conflict, and hopefully they will eventually apply those skills.
Okay.
But yeah, it was frightening. And the odd thing is that those four boys get along great now as adults.
Again, so glad to hear that.
Yeah, so weird. All right, now let's have you give me a concrete example of a sibling conflict scenario that you've experienced and review what you did, how you handled it.
Okay.
You got one?
I do. Oh, I have so many. Have you ever seen those RVs? They're called Fun Finders.
You know, I can't say that I've ever seen one. I know I've never been in one.
Okay. Well, a few years ago, we got this brilliant idea that the boys and I and my mom were going to go on a road trip in a Fun Finder.
Okay.
We were
gonna the four of you?
Yeah. We were going to rent an RV, and we had big plans. We had the route planned out, and we were so excited. All four of us, we really were looking forward to it as one of the highlights of the summer.
Great.
It's now the anti-Fun Finder, but we'll get there. So probably, I don't know, 3 hours into the trip, I think that we were all crying. It just really got bad. So what happened was that my younger one, who is the one that doesn't have a concept of personal space, was really in the other one's space a lot.
Because you only had a limited space.
We had a limited amount of space.
All shrunk down. Okay.
And I also remember it was loud in there, and we weren't able to, we were in the front, you know, driving obviously, and we weren't able to, you know, help manage things because we'd have to kind of yell back there and say, hey, you know, I don't know. And it just kept escalating and kept escalating until there was just a really bad melt. It was bad.
What did you guys try to do to deal with it?
Well, we pulled over several times and we tried little mini lectures, which, you know, we would say to the younger one, now, you know that this one needs more personal space than you do and that kind of thing, and try to use reason.
Which failed.
Failed epically.
Yeah. Okay.
Talked to the older one about, gosh, you know, I know this is hard. Validating his feelings, listening to him. Failed epically.
Okay.
We tried rewarding. You know, if you guys can make it for the next hour, then I don't know. I think there was ice cream or something.
Yeah.
And then we did the worst thing ever, which they didn't make it for the next hour, but we had ice cream anyway. I mean, it was just, you know, one, it was the anti- what to do.
So you had a goal, which was for the whole family to get along.
Oh, it was going to be so great.
Kind of a romantic, maybe your expectations were a little off.
Quite high.
And you did employ some strategies. You had some plans for how to deal with this issue, it sounds like, and you tried. It did not seem to succeed. And now you guys look back on this.
As the worst trip ever.
The worst trip ever. All four of you?
All four of us. We see those Fun Finders on the road, and now we all kind of laugh and go, oh, never getting in one of those again.
Hey. Well, so what a positive outcome, Sarah.
Oh, really? Tell me more.
Well, that the four of you have this common experience, and that you can laugh together about it now from the present.
It felt so horrible in the moment.
Yeah. I hear you saying that, and I hear you saying that maybe you failed.
Yeah. I really felt like I failed.
And I've heard you say that about just handling sibling rivalry, that you have not fixed it between your boys.
No. And it's a hard thing about being a parent educator and having this piece that doesn't feel like it has gone well. Yeah.
Well, do you know what you should have done?
Oh, tell me.
You should have refocused your goals. Mm. Well, and I'm just saying that because I think maybe you were perfect.
What?
Maybe you and your mom were perfect. Maybe you guys did everything right and it still didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just cannot make other people get along. And more importantly than the outcome is the fact that you guys had some strategies that you worked together. And now that you guys can look back at a disastrous experience that you all had together and that you will likely have learned from and not repeat.
Yeah, we won't repeat.
You're not doing that again. No more fun RVs.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is that I guess it could have been a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think sometimes parents and maybe you engage in, and me too. I'm not wanting to like blame you and point the finger at you. But I think sometimes we engage in black-white thinking. Like either I have resolved this sibling rivalry or I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't.
Right.
And you're continuing to struggle with it. And that particular experience was not good. But, you know, you're staying in the game. You're continuing to work on it in one way or another. And I think that you and your boys are learning through that process.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the outcome of having them get along perfectly is that sort of, it's not a good evaluation thing. It breeds that black-white thinking. I've failed or I've succeeded when this is one of those things you can't control your boys. I think it's really cool that you are continuing to try at this. I think that the rivalry relationship could be way worse if you hadn't tried all the things you have over time.
Mm-hmm.
They might have killed each other. Seriously.
Right.
That's okay. Not, I mean, it's unusual.
Okay. Something to focus on. Positive.
And not everything we do has an immediate effect.
Yeah.
Especially with parenting. There was a really cool study, 2013. It was a randomized trial of this intervention called Siblings Are Special.
Oh. Tell
you
me
could
more.
Enroll.
Yeah, I should sign up.
Your kids in it. Siblings Are Special. It was a group-based family intervention for fifth graders who had like second or third or fourth grade siblings. And what they did was they had 12 weekly sessions and they had some really positive results. There were appropriate strategies for parenting siblings that the parents reported they had learned. The children had more self-control, more social competence, and better academic performance. There was reduced maternal depression. So the moms were less depressed.
Yeah.
And the children's internalizing problems, like depressive and anxiety problems, were also reduced. But you know what?
What?
The Siblings Are Special intervention.
Yeah.
It did not change the ratings for sibling conflict.
Oh,
so it stayed the same.
All those positive things, and it didn't change sibling conflict.
Yeah. So what my point is that it's not black and white. We can't just point to one thing, the conflict, and say, have I fixed it or not? Because the process of all the things you're trying to do as an engaged parent who's working her brain to figure out some ways and role modeling and encouraging the boys to appreciate each other's differences and blah, blah, blah. You're doing all those things and maybe you are having positive effects in some other areas that you're not measuring.
Well, I like to think so.
Yeah.
So I guess my takeaway from this is that I need to just keep trying. And, but I mean, really, you know, because sometimes it does feel like, what's the point?
Right.
You know, I work really hard to try to honor each person's differences and I try to teach them about living with different people.
Yeah.
And maybe those are really valuable things for them that I'm not appreciating in the moment.
Right. I think so. I think I'll bet that things would be way worse if you weren't making your efforts. Mm-hmm. And I bet that you're having a positive effect in areas that you just aren't aware of yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm feeling a little better.
Good. Hey, a couple more ideas. I used to have parents bring kids to me because of the terrible sibling conflict. And one thing I developed was I called it the B.F. Skinner rat intervention.
Oh, perfect.
And I would teach the older sibling. I would say, hey, you know, it sounds to me like you're doing things like hitting your brother or sister and yelling at them and or doing all kinds of negative things. And I would just like to, if it's okay with you, teach you the very best behavior modification strategies for handling your younger brother or sister.
Okay.
And they would say, oh, okay. Right? And then I would tell them about all this research was based on research with rats. And since your younger sibling is kind of like a rat.
Oh, this is really good. Yeah.
And so then I would teach them how paying attention to when your sibling is annoying is exactly the kind of positive reinforcement that will make the annoying behavior continue.
Good.
Right?
Yeah.
So then I would teach them, what are the acceptable behaviors that you can't make your sibling go away. So what are some acceptable behaviors? Now, what I want you to do is when the acceptable behaviors come, and I'd have them identify two or three things, then be suddenly nice and pay attention.
Yeah, to reinforce.
Yes.
Yes.
Reinforce those non-annoying behaviors. And then when the annoying behaviors come, you have got to be like a steel trap. You've got to be perfectly effective at ignoring. Give them no positive attention whatsoever. And even more importantly, give them no negative attention, because the negative attention, you're like feeding them. You're like giving them candy.
Yeah. And you don't want to get beat by a rat.
No, you don't want to. You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to try this. I like it.
Another thing that would often happen, and because of the focus on fairness, you know, that the older kid would say, it's not fair. I get punished when we get in a fight. And I would try to then get the family in or the parents in and say, well, yeah, if there's a conflict between the kids, you need to give them proportional consequences. And maybe the 8-year-old has a little more of a consequence than the 6-year-old, but they both have a consequence. Like if it was a timeout, maybe it was 8 minutes for the 8-year-old and 6 minutes for the 6-year-old, you know, because age makes a difference.
Yeah.
But then maybe the 8-year-old has a little bit more freedom in some other things than the 6-year-old. And that would help the 8-year-old feel more empowered and supported by parents. I'd also really coach them to do individual time with the kids, you know, the divide and conquer scenario.
Yeah.
Where one parent would take one kid or a couple of kids and the other parent would take a couple of kids and they would go off and have fun together separately.
Yeah. You know what I'm taking away from this seriously is that it does matter that we're putting in the time to try to employ some strategies. It matters less if the strategies work. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good take home because you will be, you know, again, we cannot measure the benefits immediately.
Right. Because I think this expectation that I'm going to be living like I thought the Fun Finder was going to be, amazing all the time.
Yeah.
I do, oddly, I'm realizing in this moment that I have an expectation that we'll have a pleasant, peaceful, fun house all the time.
Right.
Which is absurd.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
Stop being absurd.
I know. Thank you.
Stop it. All right. In summary, when parents are present and engaged with both kids and they're responding and they just are engaging the family, there is less open rivalry and less mistreatment by the older kid toward the younger kid when the parent's not there.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Anyway, time for some money tips.
Yes, this is the place in the podcast where we give you advice that's the equivalent, more or less, to $100. I told you, John, that if you could solve my problem, I'd pay you more than $100.
And I said, yeah, because it's worth way more than that.
It is.
Yeah. So here's what I would say is, for parents, figure out what are your values, what's your goal, and then what's your plan or your strategy for helping reduce the conflict, okay, helping the kids get along. And then stay positive, role model the conflict management, engage with all the children, reinforce cooperation, teach the older sibling some skills, as well as the younger sibling as soon as it's appropriate to teach skills, teach co-play, teach sharing, model it, use response cost when they are misbehaving, and then stay the course.
Stay the course.
Okay. Stay the course. Just keep on doing that, even though it will not have immediate impact.
All right. So my tip was going to be that I don't have one.
Nothing works.
It has been really, this is a hard issue for me. But I think what I'm going to say now is to adjust expectation.
Ah, nice. Learning in the moment.
I know. It's great.
All right. Cool. How about recommendations?
I don't have one.
Because you just basically blew off this entire topic.
Yeah.
Just I would like to share with our listeners, because I know they're interested in this kind of thing. I said, let's do sibling rivalry because it's easy. And you said, oh.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious. It's not easy. I really would just recommend read Faber and Maslich, which Sarah has read 35 times. The title is Siblings Without Rivalry. It's the classic. It's a good place to start. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are a ton of other online resources.
Yeah, and I would say just because I was going to say it doesn't work, but we're not saying that anymore. Mm-hmm. It probably has worked. I just am not seeing the immediate benefit.
And your goal should be within your control, mm-hmm. Sarah. We know that about goal setting. Mm-hmm. And your boys getting along is not within your control. And so let go of that goal. Keep it in kind of a soft way. I mean, that's what you would like in the long run. But mm-hmm. just don't over-focus on that.
Yeah.
Focus on the process a little bit more and lower those expectations. I heard that's a really good strategy. Mm-hmm. You know what I would like to say in closing?
What?
I want to thank my sisters because they were Aww. Really good siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's nice, even when the older one was calling you names.
Well, you know, she got over it.
Oh, good.
She doesn't do that anymore.
Good. I have good siblings, too. We didn't always think so growing up, but we do now.
Cool.
I know. There's hope.
All right. Any final words, Sarah?
No. Thank you, John.
All right. Well, thank you, Sarah, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.